Chapter 21 Burning Gold. Bring me my bow of burning gold. Bring me my arrows of desire. Bring me my spear, O clouds unfold. Bring me my chariot of fire. William Blake, Jerusalem. Tessa's training at the Institute had never addressed how difficult it was to run with a weapon strapped to your side. With every stride she took, the dagger slapped against her leg, its point scratching her skin. She knew it ought to have been sheathed, and on Will's belt, probably had been, but there was no use in hindsight now. Will and Magnus were running pell-mell down the rocky corridors in Saikata Idris, and she was doing her level best to keep up. It was Magnus who was leading the way, as he seemed to have the best idea where they were going. Tessa had gone nowhere inside the morass of twisty corridors without being blindfolded, and Will admitted he remembered little of his solitary journey of the night before. The tunnels narrowed and widened again haphazardly as the three of them made their way through the labyrinth, with no seeming rhyme or reason to the pattern. At last, as they moved into a wider tunnel, they heard something, the sound of a distant cry of horror. Magnus went tense all over. Will's head jerked up. Cecily, he said, and then he was running twice as fast as he had been, both Magnus and Tessa racing to keep up. They hurtled by strange chambers, one whose doors seemed splashed with blood, another Tessa recognized as the room with the desk where Mortmain had forced her to change, and another where a great lattice of metal and copper twisted in an invisible wind. As they raced forward, the sounds of cries and battle grew louder, until finally they burst into a massive circular chamber. It was full of automatons, row upon row of them, as many as had poured down on the village the night before, while Tessa had watched helplessly. Most of them were still, but a group of them, in the center of the room, were moving and engaged in a fierce battle. It was like seeing all over again what had happened on the steps of the Institute as she had been dragged away, the Lightwood brothers fighting side by side, Cecily swinging a shimmering seraph blade, the body of a silent brother crumpled on the floor. Tessa registered distantly that two other silent brothers were fighting alongside the shadow hunters, anonymous in their hooded parchment robes, but her attention was not on them. It was on Henry, who lay, still and unmoving, on the floor. Charlotte crumpled on her knees, had her arms about him, as if she could shield him from the churning battle going on all around them. But Tessa guessed from the whiteness of his face and stillness of his body that it was too late to shield Henry from anything. Will darted forward.
No seraph blades, he cried. Fight them with other weapons. The angel blades are useless.
Cecily, hearing him, jerked back even as her seraph blade connected with the automaton she was fighting and crumbled away like dry frost, its fire gone. She had the presence of mind to duck beneath the creature's swinging arm, just as Cyril and Bridget plunged toward her, Cyril laying about him with a stout staff. The automaton went down under Cyril's assault as Bridget, a flying menace of red hair and steely blades, sliced her way past Cecily to Charlotte's side, shearing the arms off two automatons with her sword before whirling about, her back to Charlotte, as if she meant to protect the head of the Institute with her life. Will's hands were suddenly tight on Tessa's upper arms. She caught a glimpse of his white, set face as he pushed her toward Magnus, hissing,
"Stay with her!"
Tessa began to protest, but Magnus caught hold of her, drawing her back even as Will dashed into the melee, fighting his way toward his sister. Cecily was fending off a massive, barrel-chested automaton with two arms on its right side. Seraph blade abandoned, she had only a short sword to defend herself. Her hair began to slip free of its fastenings as she lunged forward, stabbing at the creature's shoulder. It roared like a bull, and Tessa shuddered.
God, these creatures made such sounds.
Before Mortmain had changed them, they had been silent. They had been things. Now they were beings. Malevolent, murderous beings. Tessa started forward as the automaton fighting Cecily seized the blade of her weapon and jerked it out of her grasp, pulling her forward. She heard Will call out his sister's name. And Cecily was caught and thrown to the side by one of the silent brothers. In a whirl of parchment robes, he spun to face the creature, staff held before him, As the automaton lurched toward him, the brother swung out with the staff with such speed and force that the automaton was knocked back, its chest dented inward. It tried to move forward again, but its body was too badly bent. It gave an angry whir, and Cecily, scrambling back up to her feet, cried out a warning. Another automaton had loomed up beside the first. As the silent brother turned, the second automaton knocked the staff from his hand and seized him, lifting him off his feet, wrapping its metal arm around his body from behind in the parody of an embrace. The brother's hood fell back, and his silvery hair shone out in the dim chamber like starlight. All the air rushed out of Tessa's lungs in a single instant. The silent brother was Jem. Jem. It was as if the world had stopped. Every figure was still, even the automatons frozen in time. Tessa stared across the room at Jem, and he looked back at her. Jem, in the parchment robes of a silent brother. Jem, whose silvery hair, tumbling over his face, was threaded through with black. Jem, whose cheeks were scarred with two matching red cuts, one over each cheekbone. Jem, who was not dead. Tessa, jerked from her frozen shock, heard Magnus say something to her, felt him reach for her arm, but she tore away from him and plunged into the melee. He shouted after her, but all she saw was Jem. Jem seizing at the automaton's arm where it wrapped his throat, his scrabbling fingers unable to find a purchase on the smooth metal. Its grip tightened, and Jem's face began to suffuse with blood as he strangled. She drew her dagger, slashing out in front of her to clear a path, but she knew it was impossible, knew she couldn't get to him in time. The automaton gave a roar and toppled forward. Its legs had been sliced clean through from behind, and as it fell, Tessa saw Will rising from a crouch, a long-bladed sword in his hand. He reached out for the automaton as if he could catch it, prevent its fall, but it had already crashed to the floor, half on top of Jem, whose staff had rolled from his hand. Jem lay still, pinned by the massive machine above him. Tessa darted forward, ducking under the outstretched arm of a clockwork creature. She heard Magnus shout something from behind her, but ignored it. If she could get to Jem before he was badly hurt, even crushed. But as she ran, a shadow fell across her vision. She skidded to a stop and looked up into the face of a leering automaton, reaching for her with clawed fingers. The force of the fall and the weight of the automaton on his back knocked the air from Jem's lungs as he hit the ground, bruisingly hard. For a moment, stars danced across his vision, and he fought for breath, his chest spasming. Before he had become a silent brother, before they had put the first ritual knife to his skin and cut the lines into his face that would begin the process of his transformation, the fall, the injury, might have killed him. Now, as he sucked the air back into his lungs, he found himself twisting, reaching for his staff, even as the creature's hand closed on his shoulder. And a shudder went through its body, along with the ring of metal on metal. Jem seized up his staff and jabbed it upward, knocking the automaton's head sideways, even as the top half of its body was lifted off him and thrown to the side. He kicked out at the weight still pinning his legs, and then that was gone too, and Will was on his knees beside him where he lay on the ground, Will's face as white as ashes. "Jem," he said. There was a stillness around them both, a gap in the battle, an eerie, timeless silence. The weight of a thousand things was in Will's voice, disbelief and amazement, relief and betrayal. Jem began to struggle up onto his elbows, just as Will's sword, smeared with black oil, riven with dents, clattered to the ground. "You're dead," Will said. "I felt you die." And he put his hand over his heart, on his blood-stained shirt, where his parabatine rune was. "Here." Jem scrabbled for Will's hand, caught it in his, and pressed the fingers of his blood brother's hand to the inside of his own wrist. He willed his parabatai to understand. "Feel my pulse, the beat of blood under my skin. Silent brothers have hearts, and they beat." Will's blue eyes widened. "I did not die. I changed. If I could have told you, if there was a way..." Will stared at him, his chest rising and falling quickly. The automaton had clawed one side of Will's face. He was bleeding from several deep scratches, but he didn't appear to notice. He drew his hand back from Jem's grasp and exhaled softly.
Rodney Medu Devardu Erimendembeth, he said.
He spoke, without thinking, in Welsh, but Jem understood the words regardless. The runes of the Silent Brothers meant that no language was unknown to him.
I thought you were gone, forever. I'm still here, Jem said,
and then there was a flicker at the corner of his eye, and he moved swiftly, spinning aside. A metal axe whistled down through the space where he had just been and clanged against the stone floor. Automatons had surrounded them, a ring of whirring metal. And Will was on his feet, sword in hand, and they were back to back. And Will was saying,
"There is no rune effective against them. They must be hacked apart by main force." I gathered that.
Jem gripped his staff and swung it hard, knocking one automaton back into a nearby wall. Sparks flew from its metal carapace. Will struck with his blade, slicing through the jointed knees of two creatures.
"I like that stick of yours," he said. "It's a staff."
Jem swung out to knock another automaton sideways.
"Made by the Iron Sisters, only for Silent Brothers."
Will lunged forward, slicing his blade cleanly through the neck of another automaton. Its head rolled to the ground, and a mixture of oil and vapor poured from its ragged throat.
"Anyone can sharpen a stick."
"It's a staff," Jem repeated, and he saw Will's quicksilver smile out of the corner of his eye. Jem wanted to grin back. There was a time when he would have grinned back naturally, but something in the change that had been wrought in him put what felt like the distance of years between him and such simple mortal gestures. The room was a mass of moving bodies and swinging weapons. Jem could see none of the other shadow hunters clearly. He was aware of Will next to him, matching his stride to Jem's, matching him blow for blow. As metal rang on metal, some inner part of Jem, some part that had been lost without his even knowing it was lost, felt the pleasure of fighting together with Will one last time.
"Whatever you say, James," said Will. "Whatever you say."
Tessa swung around, bringing her dagger up, and plunged it into the creature's metal carapace. The blade punched through with an ugly ripping sound, followed by, her heart sank, a gravelly laugh.
"Miss Grey," said a deep voice, and she looked up to see the smooth face of Armaros. "Surely you know better than that. No weapon that small can cut me apart, nor do you have the strength." Tessa opened her mouth to scream, but his clawed hands seized her, and he swung her up into his arms, clamping his hand over her mouth to stifle her cry. Through the haze of movement in the room, the flash of swords and metal, she saw Will cutting apart the automaton that had fallen on Jem. He reached to move it, just as Armor snarled into her ear.
"I may be made of metal, but I have the heart of a demon, and my demon heart yearns to feast on your flesh."
Armaros began to carry Tessa backward, through the fighting, even as she kicked at him with her boots. He tore her head to the side, his sharp fingers ripping the skin of her cheek.
"You can't kill me," she gasped. "The angel I wear protects my life."
"No, no. It is true I cannot kill you, but I can hurt you, and I can hurt you most exquisitely.
I have no flesh with which to feel pleasure, so the only pleasures left to me are causing pain. While the angel at your throat protects you, as do the orders of the Magister, I must stay my hand. But were the angel's power to fail, should it ever fail, I would rip you apart in my metal jaws." They were outside the circle of fighting now, and the demon was carrying her into an alcove, part hidden by a pillar of stone. "Do it. I'd rather die by your hands than be married to Mortmain."
"Don't worry," he said,
and while he spoke without breath, his words still felt like a whisper against her skin, making her shudder in horror. Cold metal fingers circled her arms like manacles as he drew her into the shadows.
"I will make sure of both."
Cecily saw her brother slice out the automaton, attacking Brother Zachariah. The roar of metal as it collapsed forward tore her eardrums. She started toward Will, seizing a dagger from her belt, and then toppled forward as something closed about her ankle, jerking her off her feet. She hit the ground on knees and elbows and twisted about to see that what had caught at her was the disembodied hand of an automaton. Sliced off at the wrist, black fluid pumping from the wires that still protruded from the jagged metal, its fingers were digging into her gear. She twisted and pivoted, hacking at the thing until its fingers loosened and separated, and it clattered to the ground like a dead crab, twitching faintly. She groaned in disgust and staggered to her feet, only to find that she could no longer see Will or Brother Zachariah. The room was a chaotic blur of motion. She saw Gabriel, back to back with his brother, a pile of dead automatons at their feet. Gabriel's gear was torn at the shoulder, and he was bleeding. Cyril lay crumpled on the ground. Sophie had moved to be near him, slashing out in a circle with her sword, her scar livid in her pale face. Cecily could not see Magnus, but she could see the trail of blue sparks in the air that indicated his presence. And then there was Bridget, visible in flashes between the moving bodies of clockwork creatures, her weapon the blur, her red hair like a burning banner, and at her feet. Cecily began to fight her way through the crowd toward them. Halfway there, she dropped her dagger, picking up a long-handled axe that one of the automatons had dropped. It was surprisingly light in her grasp, and made a very satisfying crunch when she drove the blade into the chest of a mechanical demon that had reached to seize her, sending the automaton spinning backward. And then she was leaping over a crumpled pile of fallen automatons, most of which had been hacked apart, their limbs scattered, no doubt the source of the hand that had seized her ankle. At the far end of the pile was Bridget, whirling this way and that as she beat back the tide of clockwork monsters threatening to advance on Charlotte and Henry. Bridget spared Cecily only a glance as the younger girl darted by her and dropped to her knees beside the head of the Institute.
"Charlotte," Cecily whispered.
Charlotte looked up. Her face was white with shock, her pupils so wide they seemed to have swallowed the light brown of her eyes. Her arms were wrapped around Henry, his head lolling back against her fragile shoulder, her hands locked about his chest. He seemed entirely limp.
"Charlotte," Cecily said again, "we cannot win this fight. We must retreat."
"I cannot move Henry."
"Charlotte, he's past our help now."
"No, he's not," Charlotte said wildly. "I can still feel his pulse."
Cecily reached out a hand.
"Charlotte,
I am not mad. He is alive. He is alive, and I will not leave him."
"Charlotte, the baby," Cecily said. "Henry would want you to save yourselves."
Something flickered in Charlotte's eyes. She tightened her grip on Henry.
"Without Henry, we cannot leave," she said. "We cannot make a portal. We are trapped in this mountain."
Cecily's breath went out of her in a little gasp. She had not thought of that. Her heart pounded a sharp message through her veins.
"We are going to die. We are all going to die."
Why had she chosen this? My God, what had she done? She raised her head, saw a familiar flash of blue and black at the corner of her vision.
Will?
The blue reminded her of something, of sparks rising above the smoke.
"Bridget," she said, "get Magnus."
Bridget shook her head.
"If I leave you, you'll be dead in 5 minutes," she said.
As if to illustrate her point, she brought her blade down on a charging automaton as if she was splitting kindling. The creature fell to both sides, sliced down the middle in two equal parts.
"You don't understand," Cecily said. "We need Magnus."
"I'm here," and he was, appearing above Cecily so suddenly and soundlessly that she stifled a scream. There was a long cut along his collar, shallow but bloody. Warlocks bled as red as humans did, it seemed. His gaze fell on Henry, and a terrible, fathomless sadness crossed his face. It was the look of a man who had seen hundreds die, who had lost and lost and lost, and was facing loss once more.
"God," he said, "he was a good man."
"No," Charlotte said, "I am telling you, I felt his pulse. Do not speak of him as if he is gone already."
Magnus dropped to his knees and reached out a hand to touch Henry's eyelids. Cecily wondered if he planned to say, Awe aque wale, the requisite farewell for Shadowhunters, but instead he jerked his hand back, his eyes narrowing. A moment later, his fingers were against Henry's throat. He muttered something in a language Cecily didn't understand, then slid closer, his hand rising to cup Henry's jaw. Slow, he said, half to himself. Slow, but his heart is beating. Charlotte took a ragged breath. I told you. Magnus's eyes flicked up to her.
You did. I'm sorry for not listening.
His gaze dropped back down to Henry.
Now be quiet, everyone.
He raised the hand that was not pressed to Henry's throat and snapped his fingers. Instantly, the air around them seemed to thicken and warp like old glass. A solid dome had appeared over them, trapping Henry, Charlotte, Cecily, and Magnus in a shimmering bubble of silence. Through it, Cecily could still see the room around them, the battling automatons, Bridget laying waste right and left with her black smeared blade. Inside, all was quiet. She looked quickly at Magnus.
You've made a protective wall.
Yes.
His attention was on Henry.
Very good.
Couldn't you just make one of those all around us and keep it that way? Keep us all protected?
Magnus shook his head.
Magic takes energy, little one. I could hold such a protection together for only a short time, and when it fell apart, they would fall upon us.
He leaned forward, murmuring something, and a spark of blue leaped from his fingertips to Henry's skin. The pale blue fire seemed to burrow in, striking a sort of fire through Henry's veins, for as if Magnus had touched a match to one end of a line of gunpowder, trails of fire burned up his arms, tracing his neck and face. Charlotte, holding him, gasped as his body spasmed, his head jerking forward. Henry's eyes flew open. They were tinted with the same blue fire that burned through his veins. His voice was rough.
What happened?
Charlotte burst into tears.
Henry, oh my darling Henry.
She clutched at him and kissed him frantically, and he threaded his fingers into her hair and held her there, and both Magnus and Cecily looked away. When at last Charlotte let Henry go, still stroking his hair and murmuring, he struggled to sit up and slumped back down. His eyes met Magnus's. Magnus looked down and away, his eyelids drooping with exhaustion and something else, something that made Cecily's heart tighten.
Henry, Charlotte said, sounding a little frightened, is the pain bad? Can you stand?
There's little pain, Henry said, but I cannot stand. I cannot feel my legs at all.
Magnus was still staring at the floor.
I am sorry, he said. There are some things magic cannot do, some injuries it cannot touch.
The look on Charlotte's face was awful to see.
Henry.
I can still make a portal, Henry interrupted.
Blood trickled from the corner of his mouth. He wiped it away with the sleeve.
We can escape this place. We must retreat.
He tried to turn to look about him and winced, whitening.
What is happening?
We are far outnumbered, said Cecily. Everyone is fighting for their lives.
For their lives, but not to win, Henry asked.
Magnus shook his head.
We cannot win. There is no hope. There are too many of them.
And Tessa? And Will?
Will found her, Cecily said. They are here, in the room.
Henry closed his eyes, breathing hard, and then opened them again. The blue tinge had already begun to fade.
Then we must make a portal. But first, we must get everyone's attention. Separate them from the automatons, so that they are not all sucked through the portal to the Institute together. The last thing we need is any of those infernal devices winding up in London.
He looked at Magnus.
Reach into the pocket of my coat.
As Magnus reached out, Cecily saw that his hand was trembling slightly. Clearly the effort of keeping the protective wall solid around them was beginning to take its toll on him. He withdrew his hand from Henry's pocket. In it was a small golden box with no visible hinges or opening. Henry's words came with difficulty.
Cecily, take it, please. Dig it and throw it, as hard and as far as you can.
Magnus handed over the box to Cecily with shaking fingers. It felt warm against her hand, though she could not tell if that was from some heat inside it, or simply the result of its having been in Henry's pocket.
She glanced down at Magnus. His face was drawn. I'm letting the wall down now, he said.
Throw, Cecily. He raised his hands. Sparks flew. The wall shimmered and vanished. Cecily drew her arm back and threw the box. For a moment, nothing happened. Then there was a dull implosion, a vanishing inward of sound, as if everything in the room were being sucked down an enormous drain. Cecily's ears popped, and she sank to the ground, clapping her hands to the sides of her head. Magnus was also on his knees, and their small group huddled together as what seemed like a massive wind blew through the room. The wind roared, and joining the sound of the wind was the sound of creaking, tearing metal as the clockwork creatures in the room began to stagger and stumble. Cecily saw Gabriel dart out of the way as an automaton fell at his feet and began spasming, its iron arms and legs flailing as if it were in the throes of a fit. Her eyes darted to Will and the silent brother he fought beside, whose herd had fallen back. Even among everything else that was happening, Cecily felt a shock go through her. Brother Zachariah was... Jem. She had known, they had all known, that Jem had gone to the Silent City to become a Silent Brother, or die trying, but that he would be well enough to be here now, with them, fighting beside Will as he used to, that he would have the strength. There was a crash as a clockwork monster crumpled to the ground between Will and Jem, forcing them to spring apart. The air smelled like the air just before a storm.
Henry!
Charlotte's hair blew about her face. Henry's face was tight with pain.
It's a sort of pyxis, meant to detach demon souls from their bodies before death. I haven't had time to perfect it, but it seemed worth trying.
Magnus, staggering to his feet, his voice rose over the sound of crumpling metal and the high shrieks of demons.
Come here, all of you! Gather, Shadow Hunters!
Bridget stood her ground, still fighting two automatons whose movements had become jerky and uneven, but the others began to run toward them. Will, Jem, Gabriel. But Tessa. Where was Tessa? Cecily saw Will realize Tessa's absence at the same time that she did. He turned, his hand on Jem's arm, his blue eyes scanning the room. She saw his lips form the word, Tessa, though she could hear nothing over the ever louder shrieking of the wind, the shuddering of metal.
Stop!
A bolt of silvery light shot down like a fork of lightning from the top of the dome and exploded through the room like the sparks of a Catherine wheel. The wind stilled, stopped, leaving the room filled with a ringing silence. Cecily looked up. On the gallery, halfway up the dome, stood a man in a well-cut dark suit, a man she recognized instantly. It was Mortmain.
Stop!
The voice echoed through the room, sending chills through Tessa's veins. Mortmain. She knew his speech, his voice, even though she could see nothing past the stone pillar that hid the alcove Armros had dragged her into. The demon automaton had kept a tight hold on her, even as the dull explosion had rocked the room, followed by a biting, vicious wind that had blown past their alcove, leaving them untouched. Silence had fallen now, and Tessa wanted desperately to tear away from the metal arms that held her, to run into the room and see if any of her friends, those she loved, had been harmed, even killed. But struggling against him was like struggling against a wall. She kicked out anyway, just as Mortmain's voice rang through the room again.
Where is Miss Greer? Bring her to me.
Armoras made a rumbling noise and lurched into motion. Lifting Tessa by the arms, he carried her from the alcove into the main room. It was a scene of chaos. The automatons stood frozen, looking up at their master. Many were crumpled on the ground or hacked into pieces. The floor was slippery with a mixture of blood and oil. In the center of the room, in a circle, stood the Shadow Hunters and their companions. Cyril was kneeling upon the ground, a torn piece of bloody bandage wrapped around his leg. Near him was Henry, half sitting and half lying down in Charlotte's arms. He was pale, so pale. Tess's eyes met Will's as he raised his head and saw her. A look of dismay passed over his face, and then he started forward. Jem seized his sleeve. His eyes were on Tessa too. They were wide and dark and full of horror. She looked away from both of them, away and up at Mortmain. He stood at the railing of the gallery above them, like a preacher at a pulpit, and smirked down. "Miss Grey," he said, "so good of you to join us." She spat, tasting blood in her mouth where the automaton's fingers had raked her cheek. Mortmain raised an eyebrow. "Set her down," he said to Armaros. "Keep your hands on her shoulders." The demon obeyed with a low chuckle. As soon as Tessa's boots touched the ground, she straightened her spine, raising her chin and glaring viciously at Mortmain. "It's bad luck to see the bride before the wedding day," she said. "Indeed," Mortmain said. "But bad luck for whom?" Tessa did not look around. The sight of so many automatons and the ragtag band of shadow hunters who were all that stood before them was too painful. "The Nephilim have already entered your fortress," she said. "There will be others behind them. They will swarm your automatons and destroy them. Surrender now, and perhaps you will keep your life." Mortmain threw his head back and laughed.
"Bravo, madam," he said. "You stand there surrounded by defeat and demand my surrender."
"We are not defeated," Will began, and Mortmain hissed out a breath through his teeth, audible in the echoing room. As one, all the automatons in the room snapped their heads toward Will, a terrifying synchronicity.
"Not a word from you, Nephilim," Mortmain said. "The next time one of you speaks will be the last time you ever draw breath."
"Let them go," Tessa said. "This has nothing to do with them. Let them go, and keep me."
"You bargain with nothing in your hands," Mortmain said. "You are wrong if you think other shadow hunters are coming to help you. At this very moment, a significant part of my army is cutting your council to pieces."
Tessa heard Charlotte gasp, a short, stifled noise.
"Clever of the Nephilim to handily assemble themselves all in one place, that I might wipe them out in one fell swoop."
"Please," Tessa said, "turn your hand from them. Your grievances against the Nephilim are just. But if they are all dead, who will be lessened by your vengeance? Who will atone? If there is no one to learn from the past, there is no one to carry on its lessons. Let them live. Let them carry on your teachings into the future. They can be your legacy."
He nodded thoughtfully, as though he were weighing her words. "I will spare them. I will keep them here, as our prisoners. Their captivity will keep you pleasant, and it will keep you obedient."
His voice hardened.
"Because you love them, and if you ever even try to escape, I will kill them all."
He paused.
"What do you say, Miss Grey? I have been generous, and now I am owed thanks."
The only sound in the room was the creak of the automatons and Tessa's own blood pounding in her ears. She realized now what Mrs. Black had meant by her words in the carriage.
"And the more knowledge of them you have, the more your sympathies lie with them, the more effective a weapon you will be to raise them to the ground."
Tessa had become one of the shadow hunters, if not entirely like them. She cared for them and loved them, and Mortmain would use that caring and love to force her hand. In saving the few she loved, she would doom them all. And yet to condemn Will and Jem, Charlotte and Henry, Cecily and the others to death was unthinkable.
"Yes,"
she heard Jem, or was it Will, make a muffled sound.
"Yes, I will take that bargain."
She looked up. "Tell the demon to let me go, and I will come up to you." She saw Mortmain's eyes narrow.
"No," he said. "Armaros, bring her here to me."
The demon's hands tightened on her arms. Tessa bit her lip with the pain, As if in sympathy, the clockwork angel at her throat twitched.
Few can claim a single angel who guards them, but you can.
Her hand went to her throat. The angel seemed to thrum under her fingers, as if it were breathing, as if it were trying to communicate something to her. Her hand tightened on it, the points of the wings cutting into her palm. She thought of her dream.
Is this what you look like? You see here only a fraction of what I am. In my true form, I am deadly glory.
Armoros's hands closed on Tessa's arms. Your clockwork angel contains within it a bit of the spirit of an angel, Mortmain had said. She thought of the white star mark the clockwork angel had left on Will's shoulder. She thought of the smooth, beautiful, unmoving face of the angel, the cool hands that had held her as she'd fallen from Mrs. Black's carriage toward the churning water below. The demon began to lift her. Tessa thought of her dream. She took a deep breath. She did not know if what she was about to do was even possible, or simply madness. As Armoros raised her with his hands, she closed her eyes, reached out with her mind, reaching into the clockwork angel. She tumbled for a moment through dark space, and then a grey limbo, seeking that light, that spark of spirit, that life. And there it was, a sudden blaze, a bonfire, brighter than any spark she had ever seen before. She reached for it, wrapping it about herself, coils of white fire that burned and scorched her skin. She screamed aloud and changed. White fire blasted through her veins. She shot upwards, her gear ripping and tearing and falling away, light blazing all around her. She was fire. She was a falling star. Armoros's arms were torn from her body. Soundlessly, he melted and dissolved, scorched by the heavenly fire that blazed through Tessa. She was flying, flying upward. No, she was rising, growing. Her bones stretched and elongated, a lattice being pulled outward and upwards as she grew impossibly. Her skin had turned gold, and it stretched and tore as she hurtled upward like a beanstalk from an old fairy tale, and where her skin tore, golden ichor leaked from the wounds. Curls like shavings of hot white metal sprang from her head, surrounding her face. And from her back burst wings, massive wings, greater than any bird's. She supposed that she should be terrified. Glancing down, she saw the shadow hunters staring up at her, their mouths open. The whole room was filled with blinding light, light that poured from her. She had become ethereal. The divine fire of angels was blazing through her, scorching her bones, searing her eyes, but she felt only a steely calm. She stood 20 feet high now. She was eye to eye with Mortmain. He was frozen with terror, his hands gripping the railing of the balcony. The clockwork angel, after all, had been his gift to her mother. He must never have imagined that it would ever be put to this use.
It's not possible, he said hoarsely. Not possible.
You have entrapped an angel of heaven, Tessa said, though it was not her voice speaking but ethereal speaking through her. His voice echoed through her body like the ringing of a gong. Distantly, she wondered if her heart was beating. Did angels have hearts? Would this kill her? If it did, it was worth it. You have tried to create life. Life is the province of heaven, and heaven does not take kindly to usurpers.
Mortmain turned to run, but he was slow, as all humans were slow. Tessa reached out her hand, Ethereal's hand, and closed it about him as he ran, lifting him off his feet. He screamed as the angel's grip scorched him. He was writhing, already burning, as Tessa tightened her grip, crushing his body to a jelly of scarlet blood and white bones. She opened her fingers. Mortmain's crushed body fell, crashing to the ground among his own automatons. There was a shuddering, a great creaking scream of metal as of a building collapsing, and the automatons began to fall, one by one, crumpling to the ground, lifeless without their magister to animate them. A garden of metal flowers, withering and dying one by one, and their shadow hunters stood in the center of them, looking about themselves in wonder. And then Tessa realized that she did still have a heart, for it leaped in joy to see them alive and safe. Yet even as she reached for them with her golden hands, one stained with scarlet now, Mortmain's blood mixing with Ethereal's golden ichor, they shrank back from the blaze of light around her.
No, no, she wanted to say. I would never hurt you.
But the words would not come. She could not speak. The burning was too great. She struggled to find her way back to herself, to change into Tessa again, but she was lost in the blaze of fire, as if she had fallen into the heart of the sun. An agony of flames exploded through her, and she felt herself begin to fall, the clockwork angel, a red-hot lariat about her throat. Please, she thought, but everything was fire and burning, and she fell, senseless, into the light.